Hey, this is Rob, and when I'm not busy regulating the transmission rates of our public utilities, I'm stacking Benjamins. Yeah.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, cold weather lovers. Well, haters. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, just in from snowblowing the driveway in Texarkana, Texas, of all places. And while I'm willing to warm your feet up, if you're into that sort of thing, I'll definitely warm your hearts by telling you what a great show we have on tap today. Here to talk about creating a healthy budget and credit profile in 2018, we welcome Chase Brand Ambassador and the host of the So Money podcast, Farnoosh Torabi. Plus, in headlines, how will the new tax laws change the way you save? We'll hash that out today, but still save time to throw out the Haven Lifeline, answer a question from the mailbag, and score a touchdown with my amazing trivia. And now, two guys who are both excited about the national championship in hot dog eating. Come on, kids, say it with me. Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hot dogs.
I only like grilled hot dogs. How about you?
No, man, boiled.
Boil them? It's so nasty.
Oh, no, and if you can have it with the bun, too, that's really soft, fantastic.
Boil your buns?
If you know what I mean. Hey there, everybody. I am Joe Salci, High Average Joe Money, on a cold Monday here in the basement. I think mom's got the heat turned down.
Well, gotta save money.
Amen. And you know, a way that a lot of people save money, OG, is by using the right people when it comes to their investments. Because back in the Stone Age, you know, before M1 Finance, investing your money on your own was intimidating, time-consuming, and expensive. You had to calculate and input every trade you wanted to make. And then you got hit by a commission every time you clicked a button. Forget about buying that one stock you wanted at a high share price, right? Well, thankfully, M1's completely changed the investing game. You can now build and own a diversified investment portfolio made up of stocks and ETFs that you pick, or you can basically tell M1 what you want to own, and they can automate your plan. It's incredibly easy and intuitive to build your portfolio, and you can customize it to your liking. Then it's as easy to manage as a savings account. Here's the fun thing about M1. They use intelligent automation and fractional shares to invest every penny in the most efficient way. And the funnest thing, it is now free. StackingBenjamins.com/M, the number one finance. Head there or download their slick mobile app on iOS or Android. StackingBenjamins.com/M1finance. Be invested. We're also brought to you by Stacking Benjamins Courses. You know, it's a new year. It's time for you to maybe get your financial house in order. And we have a course. Our business partner, Kathleen, saved half of her income, and she and I will teach you to do the same thing. So if you don't want to take the courses from those boring nerds, take them from the nerds you have fun with every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Head to learn.stackybenjamins.com for more on Stacking Benjamins Courses. We are racking up a great show today. Farnoosh Torabi back in the basement. How many times has Farnoosh been here, OG? Is it number four? Yeah, I think it is time number four. She's co-hosted when you've been away. So Farnoosh, back to talk about 2018 and getting your credit in order, getting the budget all set. Excited about that. But first, we got some awesome headlines, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
And our first headline, you might have seen this, OG. There's a new tax law. Did you know that?
I caught wind of it.
Some people keep calling it a tax bill, but it's actually a tax law now. So I think we should change the vernacular.
Okay. Mr. Specific.
Well, it is. I keep hearing about the tax bill. I'm like, no, I think it's a law today.
No, that's what you get in April. Because of the new tax law.
You do get the right. And for a lot of people, it might be a smaller tax bill. Listen to this. This is from CBS Money Watch by Ray Martin. What might the massive overhaul of the U.S. tax code mean for the American economy, job growth, wages, and the stock market 2018? While it's way too early to say for sure, some outlines are already coming into view. In the simplest view, the new tax law will result in more after-tax income for most American households starting started beginning in February when employers start using the new payroll withholding tables. Longer term, those cuts could disappear after 2025, but for 2018 at least, most workers' take-home pay will see some increases. This is the meat of it, OG. According to a recently released report from JP Morgan, tax cuts for individuals in 2018 will total approximately $100 billion, and it assumes 60% of that amount will flow into higher consumer spending. The result could be a gain of 0.3% to real GDP growth in 2018. So, what does this mean, man? I mean, so people are going to get new tax tables starting in February, meaning that
employers will get them, yeah.
But that means you're going to maybe see, you might see your take-home paycheck amount go up.
And I'm waiting for the IRS to come out with their updated, you know, tax calculator also, but this will be a good exercise for you to complete probably maybe at the end of the first quarter after you've had a quarter of earnings and a quarter of tax withholding, because you'll have about 2 months of the new payroll cycle, assuming that they implement it right away. And you want to get an idea of what your tax liability might look like for the year so you don't over withhold or under withhold, of course. But more importantly, when all that kind of dust settles and you end up with a few extra dollars in your pocket, you got to save it.
That's,
I mean, it's been gone for years. If it's $50, put that $50 in your Roth IRA, or put that $50 in your kid's college fund or something like that. Don't spend it. Don't do what they think they want you to do.
That's the key to this article, I think, is that in this piece, they talk about how the government's hoping that you go out and you blow this cash, right? And then it trickles through the economy.
Well, I hope there's a lot of people who do that for the economic.
But not our listeners.
But not our people. Right? Yes, we want to be the 40% of the people that don't spend the money and invest it. Let's let the other 60% to go spend their money.
Do you think it's time then, when you see that extra money in your paycheck, to immediately like raise your saving amount?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the small 1% increase in your 401k every 3 to 4 to 6 months or so, because you don't see it. Like, life always expands into the money that you allow it. And everybody has examples of this, and it's happened in your life and in my life and everyone else's life a million times over. I remember the first year as a financial advisor, I made $10,400 the whole year. And I remember thinking, your eyes are like, whoa, dude. And I remember thinking, like, if I could make 25 grand, I would be loaded.
Right.
I would have so much money. I have like $1,000 a month to like right. whatever I wanted to do with.
Woo-hoo!
And then I made 25 grand. And I remember thinking, all right, this is pretty good. But if I could make 50, like $50,000 would be like $2,000 a month more than I make right now. My gosh, that's so much extra money. And I remember making 50. And
they're like, what if I made 70?
Yeah, if I could make 75, or if I could finally crack six figures. And if you don't get ahead of that, your life just kind of evaporates. And I've lived the other side of it too. Mrs. OG stopped working a year ago to stay home with the baby. We lost all of her income, which she was my sugar mama. So, you know, it was a lot of money. And I can tell you that our lifestyle changed. Obviously, when you lose some money, it changed your lifestyle quite a bit. But at the end of the day, I'm not any less happy today than I was 12 months ago at this point in time when Mrs. OG was working. So what does that mean? That means that our lifestyle just kind of ebbs and flows based on how much money there is. If you can get ahead of that, especially like, you know, day one, you get that paycheck, like you said, $50 more, open up the brokerage account, set up the $50 transfer, tag it to every other every paycheck, every other Friday, whatever, and be done. You won't even notice it.
I think it's a great point. The quicker you can divorce your income from your expenses, the better off you're going to be.
Hey, don't give anybody any ideas, Mrs. OG.
I wasn't using divorce that way, but...
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And in our second headline, this comes to us from Quartz. Of course, it's been all over the financial news. This piece written by John Dietrichs. File this one, OG, in the department. We messed up a little bit.
The road department?
For 4 years. Did you see this? You know exactly where I'm going, don't you? I said for 4 years, Citigroup told clients to sell when it really meant buy. How great is this? How useful are stock ratings? John writes, a glitch at Citigroup spanning more than 4 years has given investors another reason to ask that question. The bank's electronic feed distributed inaccurate analyst ratings to individual retail customers, sometimes giving a stock a buy rating instead of a sell, or grading a security it didn't actually cover, according to the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, aka FINRA. The error affected more than 1,800 securities, though its research reports, which were available to brokers, had the correct rating. So the brokers got the right stuff. Citibank consumers got the wrong stuff. And yet, doesn't Citi like build themselves to their customers as kind of a high-end deal?
I have no idea, but this just goes to show like how inconsequential stock ratings are, right? Right? Like if half the people got buys and half the people got sells, maybe it was on purpose so that they would have transactional volume.
The better part of this, 4 years and nobody noticed.
Yeah, you might want to rethink your subscription model there, Citigroup. Right. And the efficacy of your rating system is pretty low that nobody went, this is odd. Why would you have this stock a sell? Our research suggests that it's a buy.
FINRA slapped Citigroup, which neither admitted nor denied the charges.
Of course.
Of course. And had self-reported, that's good to them, the issues to the regulator with an $11.5 million fine, which, by the way, to you and I, it's a huge fine. To Citigroup, little slap on the wrist.
One little drip in the bucket.
Don't do that again, Citigroup.
Yeah.
So I think the lessons here are number one.
So funny. It's so ironic at so many levels, is it not?
It's so great.
You know, it's just.
Best headline ever. I think the first one is throwing a dart versus using a Citigroup analyst.
Same effect.
Turns out it is the same thing. We've been joking it might be the same thing. Turns out it was. And then number two is when it comes to the new tax law, maybe it still comes down to save more money and you'll get ahead. Don't save more money and just spend it. The tax law will mean nothing to you. Farnoosh Tarabi, upstairs talking to mom right now. She's brand ambassador for Chase Slate, but also in her story career. I mean, seriously, OG, her bio reads like she's 110 years old. And this woman is young. She's worked for both Gene Chatsky already, Today Show money editor, and Mr. Sell, 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 Jim Cramer. She's the host of the CNBC show Follow the Leader about companies innovating. And also, as if that's not enough, she's the host of the award-winning So Money podcast. What'd she do in her spare time? She's written two best-selling books. Great mom. Please welcome our good friend, Farnoosh Tarabi. And my good friend, Farnoosh Tarabi, coming back to the basement. Welcome back to Texarkana.
I like what you've done with the place.
Mom makes us clean, Farnoosh, when you come around.
Is that Febreze that I smell?
I can neither confirm nor deny. But let's, he said, quickly changing the subject. This idea of credit scores that we're going to talk about, you had this really hit you in a very personal way, not paying enough attention to your credit score.
Right. I wish I was a Chase Slate ambassador all those years ago. I would have known a thing or two about, you know, just maintaining good credit health. I was, to your point, I was in my early 20s living in New York City for the first time on my own, had a full-time job, was making the Benjamins, not really, but was making money. And I started to open up a few credit cards. One in particular was a store credit card. I won't tell you what retailer, but it was one of my favorite stores at the time. And I think I just got overwhelmed with the number of bills that were coming in every month. I wasn't automating anything. That was the first mistake. I ended up forgetting to pay one of the bills, one of the monthly bills from this store credit card. I recognized it quite soon. I mean, I think a couple of days went by and I was like, oh my gosh, oops. And then I went to go pay it. I paid it on the phone so that I could pay it the fastest way. Still, I was past due. That ended up hitting my credit report, which then impacted my credit score. I didn't really think much about it until a couple of years later, I went to get a mortgage, or maybe I was refinancing, I forget. But there was a process where I had to now apply for a loan, and the underwriters took issue with it. They brought it up. They said, what is this? How long ago was this? What happened?
2 years later.
And it was like the skeletons in my closet came out, right? And I had to sort of like justify that now things have changed. This was just a one-time issue. I'm really not like this I'm really not a late payer. But it was a real wake-up call because I realized the importance of automating your bills and why it helps to be really organized when it comes to managing your payments and your credit cards, because at the end of the day, it happens to the best of us. it can really impact your score if you're not careful.
Yeah, we think that these little things, right? I mean, it seems like missing it by a day that wouldn't matter. But when it comes to your credit, the little things do matter, Farnoosh.
They do. You know, in my partnership with Chase Slate, we've been working together for a number of years now. I really appreciate the work that we do because I feel like we're getting to consumers at a point in their lives when the information about credit health and credit scores is really important. We don't learn this in school. A lot of times we don't learn it at home. And the little things do matter. Something as small as paying your bills on time, even if you miss it by 6 hours a day, it's late. Late is late. It's like being a little pregnant. You either are or you aren't. Right. As someone who, you know, had two children, it's just one of those things that you really appreciate the knowledge. You may not use the knowledge right away, but it's a great reference point.
Well, let's do this then. As you know, we've kicked off the new year. I like doing this right when it comes to our credit. Last week, we helped people clean up their debt. This week, we'll help them clean up their credit. What tips can you give us that people can implement ASAP that's going to kick their financial fitness into shape in 2018?
Well, first, knowledge is key. And you can learn your credit score and you can review your credit report right after this interview if you want. And there are a lot of ways to access those things. I just think that we can't make any change or make an action plan without really knowing where we stand. So know your credit score. It'll allow you to really create a personalized plan. You know, at Chase Slate, there's a lot of tools. There's a credit dashboard. You get your FICO credit score per month, as well as an analysis of your history. And so you can know why Farnoosh versus, you know, Joe, why our credit scores are different and what specific steps I have to take that might be different than what you have to take in order to get to a higher place with our score. And I know with the new year, we all have a lot of goals, whether that's to upsize our living, buy a home, or even renting a home. You know, your landlord, your prospective landlord will want to review your credit report. So better to get ahead of that before anybody else looks at your report or your score so that you can make the important changes that you need to make so that you can be more prepared once you apply for that loan. You know, I wish I had known before applying for that mortgage that one poorly timed payment actually landed on my credit report, impacted my credit score. I would have had just a more of a readiness to talk about it with the underwriters, maybe would have just brought it up before they discovered it.
What are some healthy habits that people that have a good credit score that they have?
Very good question. In talking to FICO a couple of years ago, the folks there, which by the way, FICO is the largest issuer of credit scores. 90% of lenders refer to FICO credit scores over any other kind. And what they found is that their best scorers are the ones who are keeping very low debt to credit ratios. So they may have a mixture of cards, credit cards, but the totality of the debt that's being carried on these cards, the balances, are very low relative to the limits. In fact, the ratio is something like 6% or 7% of total credit that you have. So just to simplify, if you have one credit card that has a $10,000 limit, 7% of that is what, $700? Mm-hmm. At any given point in time, that's sort of the average balance that they're carrying. And so that's small, but that just goes to show you know, the characteristics of somebody who has a very high score. They're paying their bills on time. They're automating. They're not messing with, you know, stamps and checkbooks. They are usually hooking up a checking account or credit card to the bills so that they get satisfied on time and in full every month.
I like at the very least, and I know, and I get what you're saying about paying the full amount, but I love for people that can't seem to get their act together, making sure that you make a minimum payment. You can hook that up automatically as well.
Absolutely. Paying the full amount every month, I get it. Not everybody can do that. It's something to work towards. But paying just the minimum, you can do better. You can do like $10 more than the minimum or 25% more than the minimum and then make that a fixed payment
right
every single month. And you will inevitably pay less in interest and you'll get out of debt sooner, even with just a little bit more.
What's another good habit people with great credit scores have?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that the rest of their financial life, they got their ducks in a row. You know, they're also the folks who are being very thoughtful about saving. They're being thoughtful about spending. They're conversational about money. You know, they're talking about their credit scores with their partners. They have transparency around their credit health. So they're checking their scores. They're sharing it with their partners. They're in the know. And they're not maxing out their credit cards. I mean, that kind of goes hand in hand with keeping a low debt to credit ratio. But, you know, certainly some months you're spending more than others. But on average, they're not spending to the limits. They're being very careful about how much debt they're carrying.
Well, we talk about being careful. I mean, part of being careful, I think, and being intentional, it sounds like, is what you're talking about.
Yes.
It means having a budget. What are some good budget techniques people can use here at the beginning of the year that'll flow through to their entire financial life?
You know, I want to say the reason I think a lot of us can't stick to budgets is because even the word itself, it creates like a visceral reaction. Because it does really insinuate that there are going to be limitations to what you can do with your money. You have to budget for X and Y and Z. But I like to think of it, kind of flip it on its head and think of a budget as more of like a choice machine. Like this is actually an engine that is going to be driven by your choices. You can't have it all, but you can be selective and you can choose. And I think that that simple adjustment in the way that we talk about budgets can be very liberating. So that's the first thing. The other thing is with any sort of spending plan or budget or choice machine, forgive the expression, but you know what I'm getting at.
Right.
I feel like you need to address obviously like the fixed non-negotiables first and then move on to the nice to have things, not the need to haves. Need to haves get to address at the very beginning. So things like your housing bill, whether that's rent or your mortgage, gas, utilities, insurance, even perhaps your groceries to an extent. We can't live without food. So kind of figuring out what are sort of the needs, to use layman terms, but then move on to the wants and be very discriminating about those wants. You can't want it all. And I feel like a lot of times when we craft a budget, I say be selfish, and that sounds kind of weird, but you know, my point with that is that a lot of times our budgets are influenced by other people's lifestyles and those lifestyles being put upon us, the way that people are friends, the way they go out and eat, their eating out habits, their clothing habits, their travel habits, how we were raised also can influence what we think we should have in our lives, even though maybe we don't really think we're not really, you know, the type of person who has to go on a vacation every month, but maybe we were raised with that kind of, you know, that kind of approach to lifestyle. And that's great. But when you have only a limited amount of money, you have to be a little more careful and selective about how you spend it. And then, of course, use tools to help you along the way. This is not meant to be a solo project, that using apps and websites and even a budget buddy, a friend, whether that's your partner or a really good friend, to help you stay accountable and also to relate to. If you have a friend at the beginning of the year who's also in this mindset of getting their finances together, pair up with this person because you can only be accountability partners, but I'm sure you can share a lot of good advice and tactics with one another.
I love that idea. I also think there's power in just saying the words out loud, like what you're going to do that week, what you're going to spend money on that week, and you're not going to spend money on that week. Because if you've got a partner and you know when you're buying something, Fardoush, that's not in the budget. Like I totally know when I'm buying my next board game and I'm going, yeah, this isn't going to go.
Yes. And if it's something that you're not sure about, it's usually a no.
Right.
I also think, to your point, I think having like rules of thumb is a behavioral trick that can be really helpful. Like just think about when you're dieting and you're like, you know, I don't eat chocolates and sweets after 5 p.m. or Friday is my cheat day. And every other day I'm really careful about my calories and my health intake. You can do the same thing with money, you know, kind of have some frameworks around how you spend and save to fall back on, because when it gets to a point where you're not sure about something or you're really tempted to buy something, having rules of thumb that say, for example, I don't spend more than X dollars on, you know, fill in the blank, or I always pay my bills on time, or I must always pay myself first. These are great rules of thumbs to incorporate into your overall financial approach to life, to help you steer you in the right directions, especially when things get a little tricky.
Yeah, I love that advice, because when the budget's tight, especially if it's too tight, that's when I find when I was a financial planner, people really wanted to splurge. Like they do a great job for 5 weeks and they'd never give themselves any of the, you know, little fun things that they want. They got rid of all of it. They're fired up. Then they come back to my office. I'd say, how you're doing? And they're like, well, we did great till we bought the big screen TV because we thought
yeah, it's like, again, not to overuse the diet analogy, but it's like if you deny yourself of all sugar for week, you might go on a bender. You know, you
right.
might like, I worry for you, you know. I mean, there's definitely people who have the tolerance and the ability, but all the while they might be miserable, or they might be, you know, feeling like they have less than because they deprive themselves so much of something. Well, everything in moderation.
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, we're talking mostly about credit. I love this idea of credit in moderation. Is there a credit rule that I should never break? You know, you talk about rules of thumb. Is there one thing out there that's like the big boy?
I mean, man, going back to my story, it's paying your bills on time. It is the largest contributor to your credit health, your credit score per FICO. It's just one of those variables that means so much to whether you have a top score or an okay score or not so great score. When we get in the habit of being late to pay our bills, that can really take a toll. And it's hard to recover from that. I mean, it's not something that you can change overnight. It definitely is something you can improve over time, you know, and automating your bills and just being on top of what's due when can be really helpful. And I always say, you know, back to your budgeting advice, and this relates to bill paying and credit, creating some breathing room in your budget in terms of when your bills are due can be helpful. So I get it. If all your bills are due on the 15th and you don't get paid until the 20th, that can create some strain on not only your budget, but also your bank account. And if you're late paying just one of those bills because of this timing, that impacts your credit. So you can sometimes call your creditors, your lenders, your all the accounts that you have and say, hey, can we adjust the date of the month that this is due because it's coinciding with a lot of other bills. I'd like some breathing room in my budget. And that's another way to kind of alleviate the stress of paying your bills, but also making sure that you can take care of your credit at the same time.
And in my experience, they're happy to do that. Like some people are surprised. Really? They'll change the due date?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then you can say, I'm going to automate this. So I'm never going to be late, but I would really appreciate doing this like the week before, the week after.
I don't know if you know this, but 2017, there was some fraud out there, Farnoosh. I don't know if you saw that. I mean, it was not on the front page at all. You ever have fraud on your account?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. The good news of that, with respect to like fraud on a credit card, I've been fortunate that, you know, my credit issuers have usually been on top of it. Even before I've discovered it, they would say, hey, did you charge this on your card? In fact, on one of my Chase cards, I just opened it. I hadn't even used it yet. I mean, I got it in the mail.
Somebody else used it before you. That's pretty
good. Yes. And Chase called and they're like, are you in Long Island right now at a jewelry store? Because we just got alerted to your card being used to buy $1,000 worth of jewelry.
Well, I'm laughing, but that's not funny.
No, but also, make, you know, the journalist in me is like, 1,000 even? Like when do you ever buy something
right.
that's 1,000 even? Like what about tax? And you know, it's usually like, is there a nine in like $9.99? But no, so then I start to wonder like, is the jewelry store in on it? Cause like, you know, what vendor is just charging $1,000? But anyway, the good news is they caught it and they issued me a new card. I had a new one in the next couple of days, but it has happened to me. And an even scarier story is I had my wallet stolen out of my son's stroller pouch. Part of that was my fault. I kind of kept it out. I didn't have it like hidden in the stroller. It was like you could see the top of it. Still, I never left the stroller's sight. I was in the elevator of this department store. Two women walked in and one woman started chatting me up about my son's sneakers or something. She thought they were super cute. So I'm telling her where I got them. And then her accomplice was on my left. And I think she was the one who took the wallet. It's the only thing I can think of. I know for a fact it was stolen in the department store because when I discovered it was gone, when I left the store, I couldn't find the wallet. And then when I went to check my bank account immediately, I noticed that they had shopped in the department store and rung up like $500.
Use as much of it as possible before they got caught.
Yeah. And then they bought Subway passes. You know, I just missed the wallet. Like that's kind of the good news about being where we are today in the world where I feel like financial institutions have our back for the most part in case something happens like that, especially on a credit card. ChaseLite has zero liability fraud protection. Your accounts are monitored all day, all week, and you'll get updates if there's anything suspicious. And I think that's kind of the good news about where we are in the financial services industry is that, you know, it's important to consumers to have their identity protected. It's of the utmost when you're talking about banks, because if we as consumers don't feel like we are banking with a trustworthy institution. I mean, that's terrible, right? So that is of the utmost when it comes to banks' priorities and making sure that they're not losing our money and they have a way to make up for it.
Well, you are here today as a Chase Slate ambassador, speaking of Chase, and what's going on new at Chase?
So much. You know, I've been working with Chase Slate. I've had the privilege to team up with them for a number of years, and every year is something new and different. I mean, our mission's never really changed. The mission is always to empower consumers to know what it takes to live a credit healthy life and how credit can really impact so much of their lives. And a lot of our customers are in different life stages. So they perhaps are just out of college, or they're about to get married, or they're going to have that first home or that first baby. And so in every aspect of their life, credit is something that touches them, whether it's they're applying for a loan or applying for a lease. And so we want to be able to give them the good information around how to boost their credit score, how to leverage their credit score to get great lines of credit and loans. But also, you know, we want to show them that accessing their credit score is easy too. So we try to do that in the way of our credit dashboard, which I talked about earlier, which gives Chase Slate customers access to their monthly FICO credit score, but also the details about why their credit score is where it is, a really detailed credit report. Yeah. And so we do, in a lot of ways, the education comes in the form of me being on this podcast, but also we do a lot of fun videos that you can find on social media. We'll do events with celebrities. I just did an event with Deepak Chopra at Chase. I have another one coming up this month in January. So for me, it's a lot of fun because I get to be a nerd about money and credit and partner up with a big and amazing institution like Chase and Chase Slate, and then get to meet so many awesome people along the way, whether that's customers or other Chase brand ambassadors. It's a lot of fun.
Well, Mom's just happy that we know you.
Oh, well, please.
Farnoosh Torabi, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thank you for having me, and say hi to Mom.
Deal.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And while I'm excited about getting my budget together after listening to Farnoosh, Joe's mom and I are both still brokenhearted today because this is the anniversary of Elvis Presley's birthday, and we miss him so, so much. No, I mean, really, I'm all shook up. But life must go on. So here's today's trivia question that suspicious minds all wonder about. How much did Elvis Presley pay to purchase his iconic house in Memphis called Graceland? I'll have your answer and a hunk of Joe's mom's birthday cake she made for the two of us and Elvis in just a moment.
You know, down here in the basement, we only like to partner with companies we're proud to put our name behind. So we're excited to announce M1 Finance. Recently sat down with Brian Barnes, CEO and founder, and asked him what makes M1 Finance unique.
M1 is one of the only automated investing platforms that allows you to customize the portfolio that you invest in. It creates a lot more engagement and fun in investing while still being easy and low cost.
Anybody who's tried online investing tools or used to compromises, do you pick a traditional self-directed brokerage that hits you with commissions at every trade, or an automated machine makes you hand over the reins? Don't compromise. Scratch out commissions at every turn, take back control of your own portfolio, and take advantage of the uniqueness that's M1 Finance. Takes minutes to sign up. Start by heading over to stackybenjamins.com/M1Finance. M1 Finance, be invested. Disclaimer, by the way, both Cheryl, my spouse, and I use M1 Finance. It works for us, but you need to do your own homework.
When you're done messing around with us, who do you want to teach you some money tricks? That nerd who talks over your head, or your favorite basement-based geeks? Kathleen Selmans operates our Stacking Benjamins classroom, and to make up for the fact that we don't teach you anything here on the show, she's created a whole lot of tools you'll absolutely love. Head to learn.stackingbenjamins.com for details, and use coupon code DOUGROCKS for 10% off. Yeah, you're welcome. Time. Oh, hello, and welcome back, Trivia Hound Dogs. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, back with your trivia answer, celebrating the great Elvis Presley's birthday. Here it was. How much money did Elvis Presley pay to purchase Graceland back in 1957? The answer? Presley, who had to move from a house with lots of neighbors who were annoyed by all the tourists crowded in front of their houses, well, he gave his parents $100,000 and told them, hey, go find me a house outside of the main residential areas of Memphis. Like everyone, except Farnoosh Torabi, of course, his parents went over budget and bought Graceland for $102,500. That might sound like a small amount of money, but in 2018, that means with inflation and... Okay, hold on now. I gotta show you some of my crazy math skills here. I'll do it my way. Gotta carry the three and then divide by the... That's a $622,000 house. Rock a hula on that, trivia peeps. See ya.
At first, I couldn't figure out why you got the answer right. And then I realized...
Well, when Doug said, hey, I got a math problem for you. Let's see how smart you are. What's 102,000 inflated at 3% for 60 years?
And he sits here pretending he's doing the work on his fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. He was asking me. He's like, I bet you can't figure that out. I bet you can't. You're so smart.
Yeah. You think you're the smartest one of all of us. Hey.
Graceland probably costs more these days to sell. Like if somebody wanted to... purchase that. I don't think you could buy it for $600,000.
I don't think so either. Now, the historical value makes that worth much, much, much more. I read that Priscilla and Lisa still spend holidays there. And if you go around holiday time, they have parts of the house that are cordoned off. You can still visit, but they have parts that are cordoned off. And like on, I think on Christmas Day, you can't visit. This is all secondhand. I could look, if only there were a place I could look this up to see if it were true. But actually, I know it's true, but the details, I don't think are even worth.
I just think it would be funny to be like taking a tour and like somebody's like having a cocktail in like the roped off section. And they're like, oh, hey, what's up?
Hey, hey, Priscilla.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Hey, I'm just going to walk through here if that's cool. And off to the left, you'll see the family enjoying Christmas. Keep moving along, people.
Yeah. Hey, let's see who's smart enough to have a Throthaven Lifeline to them, where we tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they've been spearheading innovation within the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things you value most.
Tax laws and a blue Christmas. I don't know.
And a blue Christmas. Something Presley related. It's actually your family and your time, but that's a nice swing and miss. It's why they've created a high quality and most importantly, affordable term life insurance policy issued by MassMutual. You can purchase entirely online. No need to wait several weeks for a decision when you can get one instantly with Haven Life. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote to learn about life insurance the modern way. Of course, as mom says, that tells them we sent you. stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life now available in even in California, all 50 states. And today, guess what? We do not have a Haven Life, but it's funny. We emptied out the Haven Lifeline on our letters episode back in early December. And I always do that because we have 50 million of them. And now nobody's going for the Haven Life Greatest Show on Earth.
Get your free t-shirt, peeps.
I know. And it's so much more fun to hear yourself on the show than to write us a letter. But since we don't have that, we'll go to... How passive aggressive is that? Oh, nobody wants it. So, okay. We learn from mom so well. This comes to us from Greg. Greg says, my family's financial goals, he wants us to challenge his assumptions here, OG. And here's what he's got. He says his family's financial goals are to generate about $200,000 annually in pre-tax 2018 dollars without drawing down on their initial investment in order to leave a legacy for their child. That's cool. They have two rental properties, which net about $15,000 annually after real estate taxes, insurance, each house costing about $300,000 each. Assuming this same model can be repeated, it would take 13 rental properties to generate over $200,000. 13 properties times $300,000 equals $3.9 million. The amount it would take to buy properties to generate $200,000 of annual income without having to sell the properties themselves. Follow me so far?
Okay.
I have no problem being a landlord and recognize that maintenance and vacancy would take away from my net income. The yield of our mutual funds on average comes to about 2%. On that basis, I calculate it would take a little over $9 million to generate the same income level using dividends. I recognize that dividend rates vary, but look at that variance in the same way I do maintenance and vacancy in rental properties. I won't go wholly into one asset or the other. I'm just looking for someone to challenge my assumptions. Seems like a good job for OG and thought it might be an interesting topic. This assumes, of course, rental income and dividend rates keep up with inflation. Thanks for giving this your consideration. I couldn't figure out a way to make it more concise without giving the necessary details, Greg. So $9 million into dividend payers versus $3.9 million into real estate. Why shouldn't he go whole hog into real estate?
Well, notwithstanding the diversification issue, which he kind of dismissed offhand, I think that's a really big issue, right? Having all of your money concentrated in one narrowing idea. I think a big miss here is the appreciation opportunity, right? I mean, generally speaking, over a long period of time, real estate increases, give or take, at the rate of inflation. Some areas, you know, you read about these days that housing prices are up 10% in Dallas or up 20% in Silicon Valley or whatever. But generally speaking, you want to kind of use the inflation rate. Whereas equity ownership or ownership of companies, you can kind of peg between a 9 and an 11% rate of return a year. So while if you're looking at it purely from a dividend standpoint, I would agree that, you know, you need $10 million to kick off $200,000 of dividends. But you also have to recognize that you're paid for stock ownership in other ways besides dividends as well, and that's through appreciation. So if you're looking at it in terms of just purely, you know, taking the income off the top, arguably you could go even lower. The problem, of course, with that is you can't spend all of your profits every year, right? Because then there's going to be years where you don't have profits, just like in real estate where there's going to be years where you have vacancy or you have a major repair bill or something like that. You have to set aside money to account for that in the good years. You have to do the same thing in your stock portfolio. So that's why we use that 4% rule of thumb and say, don't withdraw more than 4% of your portfolio in any year. And it should probably last inflation adjusted for a long time. So that if you use 4%, that knocks that stock value down to maybe $4.5 or $5 million instead of 9 or 10. Still maybe a little bit more than, you know, your calculation, but it's in the ballpark. So probably the right answer is to do a little bit of both. The other thing I would add is there's a lot easier way to leave a legacy for your kids and grandkids than try to amass 20 rental properties or $10 million worth of investments. It's just life insurance. Why not take a portion of your cash flow every year, direct it into, you know, a life insurance trust for your kids and grandkids to the tune of whatever dollar amount that you want. And that's going to really cut down on the amount of money that you want to leave them.
My head is just on the fact that he's comparing an apple and an orange, which I think is really
you're so
what
much
you
more succinct than me.
No, it's really what you pointed out, because I was thinking as you were talking, if he's comparing an apple to an apple, he's under diversified with real estate, to your point, right? If he was going to do the same thing with stocks, he's using the stock market in general, which also to your point is a mix of dividends, the smaller part, and appreciation, the bigger part, where real estate is appreciation, the smaller part, and dividend or, you know, income, the larger part. So we know that over long periods of time, large company stocks and real estate investments come out very similar, but how they get there is different. So if we want to try to do more of an orange to orange or apple to apple comparison, we'd take something, and this is what I thought, like a high yield bond fund, right? I would put all my money in a high yield bond fund if I was trying to get the same thing as what I was getting with real estate. Now, the cool thing real estate experts will tell you is you get some tax benefits to owning real estate that you don't get with bonds. But I'm looking at so while you were talking, I pulled up the Franklin High Income Fund. Just Franklin is a company known for their bond funds. They have a 5% yield. If I took the same amount of money that he was going to put in real estate into the Franklin High Yield Bond Fund, you know what I get? I get about $200,000. So I think it's okay for Greg to lead with real estate, but do it because you like it, not because it's a better, it truly isn't a better option. It's a different option.
Yep. but also be a little more diversified.
Yeah. 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 Amen. And I love what you said about other ways to leave a legacy. I mean, if he's really thinking about that, totally to your point, much easier and effective ways to do that.
Yeah. And does your kid want to inherit 13 rental properties?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
If I get a vote, I just take the $10 million in cash, Dad.
Right. Because
if you're listening, Dad, I don't want the trucks or the guns or the trailers. I'll just take the $10 million in cash. Thanks.
You know, I'm the executor and the trustee on some family members' estates. And the biggest pain in the ass of these estates is going to be selling the house. That's going to be the biggest pain in the butt. Like getting all that.
Well, it's that. I got one that's even worse than that. The family vacation home.
Right.
Where half the people love it. The other half the people like it now, but will also like their cash out of it. And so what's going to end up happening, of course, is you're going to have, and this happens all the time, you're going to have the half the family that says, but I want to keep the house. And the other half family that says, well, that's great, but I'll take my 200 in cash. And half the family that wants the house doesn't have the 200 in cash and they got to finance it, but they're retired. So they don't have income. So they, you know what I mean?
It's almost
like a forced sale. And then here's my supposition. Then you also have the family members who now just took the cash, but still go to the family cottage.
Just a mess.
You know, that's why really good estate planning. We could talk about that maybe on another show, but I just read an article that people were talking about how with the new tax law, increasing the estate tax limit to $11 million a person, a lot of people are just going to look at that and go, oh, well, that estate planning I have to do now. But you still do, even with low dollar amounts, because of those issues that we just talked about.
Yeah, so many problems still. Thanks for the question, Greg. And if you've got a question and would like us to throw out the Haven Lifeline to you, guess what you do? You head to steckandbenjamins.com/voicemail. And there you will find it very easy. Just if your computer has a microphone, just go to that site, navigate to that site, and bam, we are sending you a greatest Money Show on Earth t-shirt, which I think is timely with the new movie, The Greatest Showman. You know, a lot of Barnum and Bailey news lately with the P.T. Barnum movie in theaters. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
Nope. We also get the mail. Doug just was nice enough to bring it down. And I don't like the way Doug today is trying to dance like Elvis while he brings down the mail. But, you know, something for everybody. This one comes to us from Scott. Scott says, hey, Joe and OG, I appreciate that I've learned absolutely nothing after listening for over a year. One thing that drives me crazy is a 30-something-ish, somewhat financially responsible individual is when you have a guest on that says they're on track to retire by 30, 35, or 40, but never say what their retirement looks like. That is so interesting, Scott. I'm so glad that you wrote about this. He says, I always wonder if they plan to continue working part-time at a job they love, travel the world, volunteer, to sit at home doing nothing. How will they handle life changes like having a kid or caring for elderly parents? It'd be great in the next few interviews of people from the FIRE movement to ask a question or two about what happens when they actually retire. Maybe I've missed these topics in past episodes, so please ignore. Thanks for all the entertainment. You know, it's great. I have not emphasized that part, and I think it's a really important thing. If somebody's retiring at 30, like, what the hell are you going to do after this, right? I mean, studies show that if you're what? If you were turning, I think the number was 30 and in the year 2000, you had like a 6 in 10 chance of living to see the year 2030, according to Gail Sheehy, the longevity expert. I think that's her number. But it's a number. If it's not that number, OG, you've seen these numbers very similar to that. When Jane Bryant Quinn was on the show, she talked about how some of us are going to live a good long time. If you start your retirement at age 30, you could go 100 years of quote, not working.
Yeah. I want to just know how you're going to pay for all that. It's a long time. I'm going to work for 10 years and retire for 90. I love it if you can pull it off.
Well, seriously, I mean, to me, how boring is that? And I know there's a group of people listening to this show going, no, you don't understand. No, I get it. You've got other things that you want to do. But seriously, what will you do? I think is the big question there. What will you do? And I will agree, when I had Chris Reining on, who is the last interview I can think of on this particular topic, I didn't spend a lot of time on that. So I have in the past, Scott, but not with Chris and maybe not even in the last couple. But we've got some great interviews coming up on that particular topic, OG and I, just before we hit record. We've got Mrs. Frugalwoods coming on. They've got a great new book that's coming out out soon called Meet the Frugal Woods. And we'll ask Liz all about, like, what do they plan to do now? Because that's what Liz is all about. And I think that's a key to her story. So great letter. Thanks for the note. Love that. And we'll definitely take that to heart and make that part of the interview next time. If you've got a letter for us, we, of course, would prefer that you send a letter to the Haven Lifeline, which is StackyBenjamins.com/voicemail. But if you insist on just sending us a letter, head to StackyBenjamins.com. At the top of the page, it says question for the show. Follow that link and you can send us a note. Thanks again to Farnoosh for stopping by. Great to see Farnoosh again, OG. Just absolutely love all the work that she does. Thanks to everybody who's left us a review of this show. It tells people what they're getting into when they listen to the Stacky Benjamin Show. And last but not least, if you're somebody looking for great help in your corner in 2018 with your financial planning, OG's taking clients. And how do you reach him? Head to StackyBenjamins.com/letter O, letter G. And that will lead to his calendar where you can find out more about what it will take to get OG and his team in your corner. All right, that's going to do it for today. Coming on Wednesday, we're back with the top five episode. Haven't done one of these. Top five best financial moves to make to kick off 2018. We got that on Wednesday and more. See you back here. Go Stacks and Benjamins. Doug, what should we have learned today, man?
I'm caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby.
Oh, sorry I didn't see you there, folks. Hey, what should you have learned today if you were paying attention? First, looking to improve your credit? Take advice from our friend Farnoosh Tarabi and pay your bills on time. Because that's one of the main factors involved in improving your credit score. Even if you can't make a big payment, set up an auto pay so that at least the minimum is met for every credit card each month. Second, the new tax law? Look for a bump in your paycheck starting in February or March and increase your automatic savings by that same amount so you don't accidentally spend it. But the big lesson? Take some advice from Elvis. If you've got annoying neighbors who won't stay out of your house, just have your mom help you buy a new house. Problem solved.
It's a good thing I don't have any annoying neighbors.
Special thanks to Chase Slate brand ambassador Farnoosh Tarabi for stopping by the basement today. With Chase Slate's credit dashboard, you can see the top positive and negative factors impacting your score, a summary view of your credit bureau information, and helpful suggestions on how to manage your credit health. Visit chase.com/slate for details. This show was created by Joe Salcihi, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Kathleen Selmans handles design, newsletter, and classroom opportunities. If you'd like to learn more, head to stackingbenjamins.com/classes. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm pretty much the guy in charge of everything around here. Trust me, this well-oiled machine didn't get like this all by itself. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Margie down at the Sizzler just told me I made something of a Freudian slip. When I asked her what that was, she said it's when you say one thing, but you really mean your mother.
Welcome to the after show, part of the show that doesn't exist. This movie pass that I've gotten, I've seen so many movies lately.
I have an urgent alert, though, before we get to that. I'm just scrolling through my phone real fast. Apparently, Applebee's is doing $2 Blue Moons through January.
Bam!
If you're into that sort of thing,
if you're,
you may want to get to Applebee's.
Hey, Applebee's, if you'd like to sponsor the show. So I'll bet you've seen a bunch of movies, too, with your movie pass.
I was thinking about that yesterday. I'm the guy that joins the gym and never goes.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
I've used it one time.
I have gone crazy at movies.
It was just with the Christmas break with kids and family in town. I tried to get out. I just couldn't find a window to go. But I'm gonna try to get out this afternoon, actually.
That's been the bad news, is that we've had our kids home and we took them with us. So I ended up spending. The good news was I only spent
for, $10.
Yeah. $20, because Cheryl has one, too. So we only spent the money on those three kids. But then I question if we would have gone in the first place had I not had the movie passes, right? So to end up spending more, which is what movie pass is continually telling theaters, that, hey, people are spending more because
of it. I noticed that Cinemark has their own movie pass now.
It sucks.
I didn't look at the rules on it, but I just thought it was funny.
Well, it sucks in Texarkana because you can see a movie for about $5 now. And I know that in bigger cities than ours, it's going to be more costly to see a movie than $5. So I go see two films. I break even here in town. If I was in New York, I see one, right? Go back to Detroit, I see like 1.5. But here, I can see two films. But with Cinemark, you get one movie. It's $9 a month. You get one movie. One.
Per month?
Per month. And your friends can go see a movie for $9 with you. You can buy unlimited other tickets for $9. So if you live, once again, you live in New York and it costs more than $9 to see a film there, or you're going at whatever time in a...
Yeah, but you have to go to a Cinemark. You can't go to AMC.
It has to be a Cinemark. The good thing about the Cinemark is, and I don't know if this is good or not, I remember talking to Erin Lowry about the fact that she smuggles food in every time she goes to a movie so she doesn't go to the concession stand. It's like, I have no problem with a bottle of water and, you know, my own candies from Bed Bath & Beyond or wherever.
Place to buy candy from, but okay.
No, you know, it's our Bed Bath & I swear, Bed Bath & Beyond is down the strip mall from our Cinemark, right at the front door, dude. Bottle waters, bottled sodas, and movie theater style candy. Guess what they're doing? They are totally cleaning up on the Cinemark, right? Being right next door. I won't show anybody the gesture that OG's making that Bed Bath & Beyond's making a Cinemark. I mean, it is clearly, you walk in there, and I remember the first time I saw this, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I walk in, I'm like, what's
up? If they ever launch a little popcorn stand.
Right.
Get your movie popcorn.
You walk
in. Hey, can I interest you in a duvet cover? Oh, no? How about a movie popcorn?
What about the... I walk in with a huge bag just smelling like buttered popcorn. And they're like, oh, what's in your bag? You smell like popcorn. Well, thank you very much.
A big poofy coat on. It's July. Just like popcorn billowing out of it. Tell us about the movie you saw.
Sir, is that popcorn? Well, thank you. I that's my cologne. Thank you very much. Yeah. Anyway, I went with the family over the holiday break to see this movie that we referenced just earlier, starring Hugh Jackman, called The Greatest Showman.
Showtime. Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
You're still just the tailor's boy.
Better luck with your next job.
Those people will never accept us.
This isn't the life I promised you. Not even close.
But I have everything I want.
Girls, I think I've had an idea. Look out, 'cause here I come. Putting together a show.
It's a place where people can see things they've never seen before. Okay.
I'm not scared. Who's that?
And what is your act?
I don't have an act.
Everyone's got an act.
And from the Academy Award winning team that brought you La La Land, this year they have another musical out, The Greatest Showman, starring Michelle Williams and Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron. This film goes over, purportedly, it says based on a true story. It's funny, after we got out of the film, we went to the greatest place to look up what happened in real life, Wikipedia. I don't know if you knew that, but we went to Wikipedia and they took some liberties. They took some big liberties. But this is a movie about a guy trying to prove himself after growing up in very, very impoverished conditions, being a child of the street, and then deciding that to get the attention, it seems, that he's always craved, he's going to have the greatest show on earth. And it's going to also be a show that shows people who are, quote, normal, that people that are different, really, they're not different and shouldn't be made fun of as much as they're special and they're performers. And really brings these people out of the shadows and into a place where people can see them. First of all, you kind of like musicals, don't you?
Yeah. I think it's a theater.
Did you see La La Land?
No.
I'll tell you, the music in this movie is incredible, which is what you'd expect from the group that brought you La La Land. Like you would expect great movie. The songs are great. The movie flows. There's a lot of tension in the film. There's obviously the issue of these performers. There's the fact that a lot of what P.T. Barnum is bringing around isn't real. And it's his, I like the idea of his internal struggle to make people, to become real in people's eyes, you know? And like Michelle Williams said in the clip, she said, you know, these people are never going to accept us. And he's working very hard to get this acceptance that he knows is more of a chip on his shoulder than anybody else, right? A lot of times you see these people, OG, where they continually are worried about something the rest of the world isn't worried about them. And in a large part, the second half of the film, that's P.T. Barnum and his issues. So I went through it, my toes tapping the whole time. The music was fantastic. Most of the film is musical. So if you don't like a musical, you probably don't want to see this. I really enjoyed it, found myself riding the ride, but I got done and I thought, man, a lot of these issues that are in the movie, big, big issues that are kind of swept under the rug. Like he has a situation in his marriage and then it's kind of okay after a little while. And then like almost immediately. And then he has a problem where with the circus itself. And that's kind of swept under the rug. Like, you know what? Like they bring up these problems and then they just kind of magically are solved. And I don't think these things are solved as easily as they are in the movie. But if you like a great ride in 2 hours of fun music and really some pretty good acting. And, you know, Hugh Jackman, whenever it comes to any of these song and dance numbers, like you've seen him on award shows, who better to do that type of thing, right? And Michelle Williams can play anything. Zac Efron, another very good actor. So I'm going to give this kind of a qualified thumb up that as long as you're not looking for anything heavy, you just want a nice trip to the theater to watch a nice story that says it's based on real life.
That may or may not be true.
Yeah. The Greatest Showman fits the bill. So I liked it. I know the Rotten Tomato score, not great. I think around 60%. So not horrible, but not great. But good. But what do you call it? You call these a good popcorn movie, right?
Yeah, popcorn flick.
I would say watch it at home, but a film like this with such big set pieces, these song and dance set pieces, much better on the big screen. Usually with a film like this.
So basically at home.
Well, usually with a movie like this, I'd say don't watch it on the little screen at home. Watch it on the huge. So if you got the huge screen at home, like the OG family does, you know, yeah, it's awesome. But otherwise, Greatest Showman, really, I like it in the theater. So if you got the movie pass, go see Greatest Showman. Man, that's film one of 57 that I've got. I can't wait to talk about some of these other ones. So a steady diet of that. All right, everybody, go stack some Benjamins. Bye-bye.